Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 279 for March 20th of 2015. Ford sharpens its edge. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific or 19 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. Gary, hey, we meet again in the studio.
It's been minutes.
It's been minutes because we were both at a press conference at Ford just a little bit ago.
Yeah.
And I was at another one at FCA before that. Maybe we'll talk about
both of those.
Later in the show. But we got to let everybody know we got Aaron Bragman.
Hello.
From Cars.com. Yeah. Great having you back here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And, of course, we got to let everyone know we got our special guest here. Scott Smith, the program manager on the all-new, not just new, all-new Ford Engine. Great having you here, man.
I am thrilled to be here. I was telling you earlier, I'm a little bit of an Autoline groupie. Every Sunday I'm watching it, and I try and catch it every day.
That's awesome.
Don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone at work, but I do catch it every once in a while.
So you've run the whole program for this new one.
So my background is before this Edge, I was the engineering manager at Oakville Assembly.
In Canada.
Where you build it.
I'm sorry?
Where we build
the car. And I had responsibility for the outgoing Edge engineering-wise.
So you knew everything that had to get fixed.
I knew what our customers' wants and needs were. And I moved into the new Edge program just before we started building prototypes. So probably the best job I've ever had, taking that kind of knowledge from production into something that's never been built yet, and it was tremendous.
So what advantage does that give you?
Well, obviously, the customer base, I knew it. I knew what they complained about, and I knew what they loved. And when you bring that to the new car, it's kind of like fresh eyes for engineers who have been working on things over and over and over, or parking technology. You know, they're really working on parking technology, and sometimes they don't remember what the customer really wants. Bringing that kind of knowledge, I think it helped a lot.
How'd the launch go?
Launch was fantastic. It was scheduled as a 15-model year. It launched as a 15-model year, and cars have started shipping, I'm happy to say. So dealers should be seeing it now. As a matter of fact, I think we sold our first one last week.
So it's got to be good to have a plant guy running the program, especially when it comes to launch.
It does.
You know which names to take and which asses to kick.
Well, the relationships, with the Oakville Assembly Complex remain. So you're right. We do know how to call and how to get things done. And I have to be honest, the Oakville Assembly Complex, world class. The people there, they deliver every single day.
Well, and this vehicle is significantly different than the outgoing vehicle. It's, what, 4 inches longer?
It's about 3.5 inches longer.
Well, wait,
it's,
big thing. This is based on the Fusion platform, so Mondeo platform.
Let me give you the whole story.
Yeah, dude.
It's all new. There's a couple components that are carryover. We have a carryover 3.5 engine, but everything else in the car is new for Edge. It's based off of our midsize CUV or midsize car platform. Fusion comes off of it, S-Max in Europe. It has a 2-liter engine now, a twin-scroll EcoBoost 2-liter engine as its base engine. Has a 2.7 in the Sport that is a rocket ship. All new sheet metal outside, all new interior. It's just a fantastic vehicle.
Now, so it took a lot of work in the plant to...
Well, $580 million of retooling Oakville Assembly.
Wow.
To put this in, and a lot of craftsmanship goes in there. You know, we put robots in, we put measurement tools, and that plant still builds Flex, MKT, and soon the MKX up there as well. So, tremendous work out in Oakville.
Moving to that new platform, you're able to put a lot more electronic technology in this thing as well.
I mean, it's, technology in here. When we put together this Edge, there was a lot of discussion around what do we want to do, and technology rose right to the top. And as we go through, there's tons of technology new for us, parking technology, and camera technology, and other things that you've seen on other cars, hands-free liftgate and moonroofs, that the list is very extensive, and the car has so much technology, it really helps you out when you're driving.
Now, I'm sure the company moved this to the Fusion / Mondeo platform because, you know, you get economy of scale and all that stuff. But what about weight? Were you able to take weight out of doing this?
We took out 49 pounds. Now, that's a big number. It's not, you know, it's not giant, but 49 pounds. We put so much technology back in. Let me rephrase that. We put technology in and still took out 49 pounds. So we did do a nice job.
Good.
Yeah, it is pretty nice, especially when you see the list of technologies that are in it.
How long was this program in gestation and execution?
It's the standard Ford process. So, you know, it's proprietary, but it's 3 to 4 years of hard work. You know, we start in the studio just like everybody else, and then we build prototypes and we finally get into the production. I think it was about June last year when we started building cars in the plant.
Now, when we did our television program recently, we had Joe Hinrichs on. He says Ford's actually added some time back into PD. Did you do that on this program?
We're really focused on quality. So there's a lot of internal metrics that we have to meet for us to continue to the next milestone. So there is some time added in there, but it's for the better. You know, if we find something that isn't meeting our internal requirements, we stop, we rethink, we fix, and then we go forward.
Mm-hmm. You've gone with a new engine strategy for this one versus the last edge. The last one had the standard, the V6 was standard. And then
3.5 was standard.
You'd upgrade to the 2-liter turbo, but now you've switched that around.
Yeah, we really prioritized a little bit better fuel mileage for our base vehicle. The 2-liter EcoBoost is a really nice engine, and now that base car gets 20, 30, 24. So 24 average miles per gallon. A nice improvement from where we were with the 3.5. The 3.5 is still available. It's a great engine, but we're really focused on a little bit of better fuel economy for the customer.
At the very top of things, there's a sport model as
well. That 2.7 engine, it's incredible. And it's only available in the sport, and we don't have a sport here today, but I'm sure you can see it online. The appearance of it's great. The 2.7, the power in the car, it's a V6 EcoBoost engine. We drove it last week in Scottsdale, and it is just a rocket ship. It is so fun to drive.
What do you target with that versus like the base Model Edge? Is it a different customer?
So the customer, our customer base is varied, but it's for the customer that wants everything, wants this people mover, and yet still wants to have fun in the car. And I think we've delivered that fun, both in driving dynamics and in power.
And it's got a nice package, too. I was on that program in Scottsdale and drove it. And,
the interior's beautiful, and we changed some things. The front end grille has changed. You get different fascia treatments. The claddings are body color. The wheels, you can get a 21-inch black wheel. It just makes the car something special.
But no more 22s. They used to have 22s on the last
No more
one,
22.
Those are gone.
That's true, but we're going to maintain that fun and the appearance. We fill that wheel well up really tight now. It looks beautiful.
You know, the big wheels look terrific, but they don't ride as well.
I thought they looked a little awkward, quite frankly. I thought it looked a little too big for the shape of the car, but apparently, you're right, they didn't ride very well at all, and it had to have been an unsprung mass thing as well.
But that's on everyone. I'm not just saying on the edge.
Yeah, we're anxious to see what our customers feel with the new Sport package, because I think it's great. I think the team thinks it's great. We can't wait for it to get out in the marketplace.
What surprised me most about that 2.7 V6 and the thing was that it sounded like an old Volvo 5-cylinder. It sounded a little discordant and had a kind of a rasp to it that was really quite a stunning. You were there as well, weren't you? Did you have the same experience in the V6?
Mm-mm.
No?
No.
Oh, guess it's just me.
The other thing that I like about what you've
different
done with this is a lot more interior room.
So it's longer, it's taller, and we really paid attention to package, not just in the behind the second row seat. We paid attention to package in the collar or the center console, the glove box. We added the bin door above the IP. So the customers like to put stuff in places. We even have an umbrella holder on the side of the seat. So we did pay a lot of attention to giving them room to put things.
So you were saying that you had the familiarity with what consumers had said about the first vehicle. I mean, and there were a lot of those sold, so there's a lot of people out there who own Edges. So, I mean, what are some of the things that you have in this new vehicle that if somebody owns an Edge right now and they're thinking, you know, I'm going to get a new car, but should I get an Edge? Should I get, you know, go someplace else? I mean, what did you put in this thing?
So, number one, the driving dynamics are just fantastic. So the driving experience itself is great. Number two, wind noise. The actual quietness of the cabin. We have done so much work on making sure that the driver and the passenger is sealed from the outside noise. And then number three, I mean, the elephant in the room is when we launched Sync, there were some issues with it. We now, if you ask J.D. Power, IQS says that we are the number one, and it's going to continue to get better. So that customer interface is fantastic now.
I was wondering why there wasn't Sync 3.
So Sync 3 is is planned for Ford. It's going to come out when we have completed our internal launch of it, and it comes out later this year is the plan. And it'll come out across the board.
Will it go as a running change for this? Because the ones we saw for here had the older style sync. Right.
Yeah. But this is a 2015 car.
This is a 2015
and you'll have a 2016 car, and then you're going to get your number
2016 car is what we're planning to launch Sync Gen 3 in.
Scott, another thing, too. Ford's putting not just backup cameras, but forward-looking cameras. Oh, talk about that and why.
When we were in Scottsdale, we had two Transits parked with a spot between us, and we backed an Edge into it. And this new front camera technology that we have on the car, you hit a button and it shows you normal, and then you hit it again and it shows you 180 degrees. So you actually can look down the street without moving the car to make sure it's safe before you park or pull out. The other thing we've added is we've added sensors on the sides of the car at the rear edges, at the rear edge of the front fascia and at the forward edge of the rear fascia. And that allows you to get 360-degree coverage. So if you're pulling out of a parking garage, for instance, and there's a pole, you know exactly how tight you are when you're turning a corner to that pole, visually and audibly. So much safer in this car and much safer for the car itself against poles.
I mean, it's very clever, that forward camera sensor that you have, the way you have a washer to keep it clean.
So there is a washer jet. Obviously, in the front of the car, it's going to get hit with bugs and things like that. So we did package a washer jet as well, and it works. Every time you wash the windshield, you wash that front camera.
See, I love that. I can't tell you how many times this past winter I've gotten into cars to back up, and there's snow or ice or water or something on the lens, and rendering the backup camera almost impossible to use.
This might be a northern Midwestern problem.
It might be, but still, I love this little washer thing.
Yeah, it's the way to go. The Edge doesn't have it on the rear.
It's in the front.
It's in the front. Explorer will have the first rear wash for our launch later this year, and it's an opportunity in the very near future for us as well.
Now, I got to ask, you must have worked on the Lincoln version of this, too.
I did not work on the Lincoln version, so... it's going to be a great product. The Edge is a great product, but I can't help you with details on the MKX.
Gotcha.
You know, I got to ask you, so it has this parallel parking feature that it will back into the space, which was rather clever and unnerving. Yeah. But why is it that the operator has to operate the pedals?
So just a little bit about the technology first. So we have parallel park. We had that in we've had it in previous models. We've added park out for parallel park, and that's for when you park parallel and somebody comes in after you and maybe pulls a little closer and you're uncomfortable with backing out. You hit this button and it will maneuver the car out. The customer manages the gas and the brake. And then we have perpendicular park where it will sense a spot and it will back you into the spot. Your question was...
Why does the operator use the pedal?
So you're saying, why isn't it just autonomous? Why don't we just do it, huh?
Yeah.
Well, it's an opportunity for the future. Right now, I don't think that we have clear way forward to get that without any bugs in it, but we're working on it. Again, an opportunity. This technology, though, fantastic. I know you said it was a little bit unnerving, but after you get used to it, it's something you use all the time. It's like a keypad or a heated steering wheel. Mm-hmm. When you park, this thing centers you between the cars, and it's just fantastic.
No, the unnerving part is that you're seeing it on the camera in the display, and you're like, it's going to hit it.
It is.
What I'm impressed is the Ford system absolutely works.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've tried Brand L, and I could never, ever get it to work.
No.
And you guys are deploying this on all kinds of cars up and down the price range, and nobody else has pretty much followed you on this.
Yeah, we're pretty much the leader in technology with respect to parking, so pretty proud of that, and it is going to expand, like you said, autonomous parking. Mm. It's obviously an opportunity in the future, and it's going to come. Hopefully, we're the first ones to do it.
It's a lot of fun to do with people who are in the passenger seat who have never experienced that kind of thing before. Mm-hmm. You pull up, you push the button, you take your hands off, and the wheel's doing its thing, and people freak out.
Yeah, there's some great videos online.
Oh, yeah.
You should watch people. they're really surprised.
I might have done that before once or twice, yeah.
So we have a view of the camera right here and showing the enormous amount of space in the back. Cubic capacity do you have?
I don't know the numbers off the top of my head. It increased by about 12%. The other thing that you see there, you see the second row seats fold back so that you can obviously put a lot of material in there. Well, second row seats are also reclining, so when they're up, you can get added comfort. And we've added There's the tilt switch. We've added heat to the rear seats now, too, so more comfort for the passengers.
Brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. It's...
I tell you, that's one of the greatest inventions that's ever come along in automobiles is heated seats.
Auto start or remote
that's
start,
my favorite,
heated
yeah.
steering wheel and heated yeah, seats. Yeah. The most important things here in the Midwest.
And you mentioned another one, second row seats that recline.
Yeah, we had it in the previous Edge. Again, from my experience, the customers love it. They absolutely, you know, you're not sitting up straight all the time. If you want to lean back a little in the second row, the opportunity is there for you.
It's a big difference, especially on a long trip.
I rode quite a bit in the second row last week, 2 hours at a time, and I tell you, I was comfortable the entire time. You could hear the drivers, you could hear the discussion, and it was comfort.
Mm-hmm. Except when the journalists were actually driving, of course. That was a little nerve-wracking, yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. It makes me ill.
It was very nauseous.
Oh, yeah. For China, you've got a three-row model.
So the Edge... It launches in Oakville here for North America, and that'll ship to South America. It's shipping now. Right behind it, we are launching the export version of the Edge, and it will go to Europe. That'll have diesel engines as well as right-hand drive. Mm. And then in the middle of the launch process, it will be out later this year, a three-row Edge in China will also launch.
Manufactured in China.
Mm. So truly a world vehicle. And it was all engineered right here in Dearborn.
Will the Chinese version be dimensionally the same as this car?
Well, obviously, with the third row in it, it'll be a little bit longer, and the rear end stands up some more to get you some headroom back there.
Oh, interesting.
But from the B-pillars forward, pretty much the same car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you know, the body side of this has so much more form than the previous generation. The previous generation was pretty...
Really, it looked heavy, didn't it?
It looked somewhat bland.
Yeah.
So in the plant, I mean, were there any issues in terms of stamping getting that character?
Again, our stamping operations, world class. They meet with the team while we're still in the studio, and they give feasibility on what the side of the car looks like even before we start thinking about stamping the first panel. So there's always challenges with stampings because you want to have surface quality that is just optimal. But this car really, really did well with respect to stamping right out of the gate in production. Great sheet metal quality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So very happy
with it. Looks very nice.
Scott, the whole world seems to be going to crossovers, but this specific segment, the two-row and all that, how's that entire segment doing?
So the segment is growing. The utility segment is growing. Here in North America, it's about level. We sell right around 120,000 a year. We expect to maintain that. With some added technology and with the export, the volume out of Oakville will obviously increase. And we think we'll do better. Hopefully the customer will like what they see and the volume will go up. We got room to build more.
What do you wish you had for this thing? Given what your competitors
are delivering.
I wish I had
keys to drive it. Mine isn't.
I'm sure you've got,
mine isn't
one on order.
Yeah. I did order one.
Exactly.
But it's got push button start though, right?
Well, yeah, you still have to have a key fob.
Yeah. So you want a fob. You don't need a key.
Right, I want a fob. Sorry.
But what feature content would you love to offer?
Well, obviously in the future. I mean, you brought up autonomous driving. Wouldn't it be nice to sit in your car and text or drive safely and get some work done on the way to work? So in the future, I'm really looking forward to something like that. Everything else is on the car. With the technology available today, I think we're doing just fantastic.
And very interesting. I wasn't aware that this was going to Europe as well. Mm. What kind of customer feedback did you get from that? Or are you just throwing it out there and seeing what happens?
We clearly went to the market in Europe and said, is this something you would want? You know, we have an S-Max and a Galaxy in Europe right now. This car looks completely different. It looks a little bit more way more upscale to the European buyer. It has a lot more technology. And the customers there said they would love to have it. Now, we did put diesel engines in it. We did put right-hand drive because that's what their market requires. So
that alone is pretty impressive, doing right-hand steer.
Yeah, it's a big task. You don't realize how difficult it is until you just see what it takes to put right-hand drive in these cars.
Oh, yeah.
And you're doing this in Oakville.
We're doing it in Oakville, yes. So we'll ship cars from North America to Europe.
And will they have the engines installed here or there?
They will have them installed here.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So did you look at the diesel engine for this market?
We did, and our customer here in North America is not embracing diesel. However, it's an opportunity for the future. Obviously, if we build it there, we can do it. But our customers here right now are focused on gas, and our EcoBoost delivers that.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talked a little bit earlier in regard to what Aaron was saying about your three-engine strategy. Could you talk a little bit more about, where you see these things positioned? They all have the six-speed automatic transmission.
That's correct. The two-liter is fantastic for fuel. It's our best for fuel. And it's really pretty peppy as well. The other thing, we've added all-wheel drive available with the two-liter on the base car. So I think it's going to be the volume engine that people really want to have, and it helps us with fuel economy, helps everybody with fuel economy.
They were saying something like, what, 40% or something like that?
It does.
Yeah.
And then the 3.5 is a great engine. I mean, we've been building it for a long time. It's tried and true, and it's going to last. And it gives you a little bit more engine presence, a little more throaty sound. You hear that V6, and it does give you more power. So they both have 3,500 tow, both available. And then the 2.7 is very, very quick. I feel great. It feels like you're in a sports car coming off the red light, and the handling is just something spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Way cool. Well, look, we're going to take a quick commercial break here in just a minute, but we've got some questions coming in from the audience. I got one more question that I want to ask you as well, but we're going to take a quick commercial break and give a shout out to our good friends at Bridgestone.
Is that Jay Giles on there?
I don't think.
Oh, no, it's Washington.
But it isn't.
What is it? Oh, it's your...
Hey!
Hey!
Did you have a good nap?
The Firestone Destination LE2. Tough enough to handle anything the road throws at you. And you throw at it. Durable, dependable Firestone tires. Whatever you drive, drive a Firestone.
Really focused on craftsmanship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're back. And one question I wanted to ask you, you're making a platinum version of this, right? And
isn't
that a first?
You're,
no, you're
not. Platinum. No, okay. We have SE is a base car, and SEL, and then a titanium. So the titanium has replaced.
That's what I'm
thinking of. Right. Titanium has replaced the Limited, so it's very upscale, and then we have the Sport that is available.
Slightly less precious metal, but hard to weld.
Yeah.
Explorer does have platinum coming, though, so there is another opportunity for us in the future to maybe even put more upscale material.
I'd be very surprised if there wouldn't be a Platinum Edge coming at some point. I mean, in many ways, these are just like pickups. There doesn't seem to be an upper price limit for a lot of these things. People are paying a lot of money for them, especially for leasing.
Well, interiors, I mean, are really key now. If you can get a very luxurious interior with fantastic leather, you just feel better driving the car.
Okay, we've got some questions that have come in from our audience from all over the world. In fact, Marion Kershavelin, and I'm sorry, I'm sure I did not pronounce that properly, but Marion wants to know, will the Edge be sold in Central Asia?
In Central Asia.
We have a viewer here from Central Asia.
The plans right now are for China. Again, an opportunity exists for us there, so we'll look into that.
Gotcha.
We'd come from that region, but we need to assess.
He also wants to know, because he must have seen the show that we did with Chris Reed from Nissan, how does the Edge compare to the Murano, Nissan Murano?
So I watched that same show, and we were talking earlier. I think they are just a revolutionary car. They've taken their car. We came out the same year. I think it was 2006 for a 2007 model year. They came out. We came out. We were a little more mainstream with appearance, and quickly we took the sales leadership. Same kind of thing happened here. They are revolutionary. We are evolutionary. You see the same cues from the current Edge, but they are more refined. So with respect to technology, I believe we have more technology in the car. Fuel is about the same, 24 average, but it's going to be up to the customer to see what's really the leader.
It's more engine choices, too.
Well, clearly more engine.
Murano's
I think they only have
one
aspirated.
The 3.5, right?
Yeah, 3.5 aspirated.
They have those zero-gravity seats, so you really don't need more.
Yes, that's true. It's just,
they are comfortable, though.
It's that advantage of zero gravity.
I think they're comfortable. A lot of my staff doesn't like them, though.
Interesting. Okay, Dan the Man says, even though Lincoln has a separate studio, was there anything that was supposed to be on the Edge that didn't go through due to the MKX?
There was nothing that didn't go through. Now, we have discussions around, you're going to see some different technology on MKX, but to put that technology in our Ford Edge would really price us out of the range for the titanium, the SEL model. So in the future, there may be an opportunity for us to share some of that, but we're going to focus on getting MKX to the really upscale customer, as we should, and our titanium is going to be loved by our buyers.
So it's not going to be a Revell audio system like that?
That is Lincoln only. We have our own great audio system.
Amado Arceo wants to know, does the new sync system have on-screen buttons? He says, my 2010 Fusion does and is flawless. My wife's 2013 Escape is voice-activated only and is frustrating. So, I'm being kind, he says.
Yeah. We listened. We heard a lot of that from the customers, and you'll find redundant buttons on the IP of the current Edge as well. So you can still use the screen. You can still use voice activated, but we do have buttons for your use.
Thank you for bringing the buttons back, by the way.
We listened.
From all the journalist community, at least.
Mm-hmm. Mike from Philly wants to know about a program that's not yours, but maybe we'll get an answer out of you. Mm-hmm. He says, the growing popularity of subcompact SUVs. Buick is having a huge success with the Encore. Will Ford clean up the EcoSport, the EcoSport, and bring it to the U.S. market?
I don't know the answer to that question. I would give you hints if I knew, but I have no idea. What I can tell you is I know it's our Escape is a fantastic car, not quite as small, but it's something people ought to look into.
Did you guys learn anything from the launch of the Escape that you applied to the launch of this vehicle?
We learned from every launch in every region. Everybody puts out lessons learned that we go, as a program manager, we go get those and say, here's some things that didn't go well. We need to go fix those. So we do learn lots of things.
Mm-hmm. Abhi Kumar says, I'm just wondering why American and Canadian cars do not have rear fog lights. I was in Europe, and almost all cars have rear fog lights. It really helps in bad weather, he says, and for others to see you.
So ECE requirements, Europe requires a rear fog lamp. In North America, we don't. Now, is it a technology? We have the technology. We can put it on there. Our customers right now aren't asking for it. Mm-hmm. We could do it, but we're going to deliver what the customer
wants. I think it's foggier in Europe than it is
be.
Here.
I don't know.
Americans would know what to do with a rear fog
light. So would that require a different fascia for the rear?
That depends on where you mount it. You can mount it higher or lower, but most of the time it does go in the fascia, and you have to have some sort of fixings back there.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we got a phone call that's just come in, too. So, Ben, let's bring that in.
Hi, this is Warren from the Strubaker Ranch in Paris, California. I'm also a Ford stockholder. Oh. And I'm looking at this new Edge, and I can't believe it. It's just so knocked down gorgeous. With the front-facing camera, I'm wondering if there is or will be, possibly, a way to connect that so you could record with it, like for the, do the same as a dash cam. Great show. Really enjoying it. Great car. Talk to you all soon. Thank you.
Thanks Bye. For the call. Yeah.
So the technology clearly would be there. I mean, we can record from that camera. It's not in the vehicle right now. Clearly, there may be some NHTSA discussions around what it would take to have cameras recording things. But an opportunity possibly for us in the future.
Yeah, but think about it. You're on a nice vacation. You go, what beautiful scenery. Hit record, and you got it.
What I can tell you is, in the media drive last week, I saw lots of GoPros stationed on the front of cars. So obviously, it's something that for an opportunity in the future we'll go talk about.
GM's got
that. Well, the performance data recorder in the Corvette.
Oh, for the Corvette. Yeah.
And the rear view mirror.
Track package. Yeah.
Push a button and it records what you're driving and how you're doing it.
You stick it on a USB drive and just get it.
Share it via Twitter. Yeah.
Opportunity for the future.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a clever idea. I really like it. Mm-hmm. What else? What have we missed here, Scott? Anything else that talk about?
Again, I think the customer needs to go to FordVehicles.com, have a look at all the technologies that are on the car. Build and price one of your own, and then go out and drive one, because you can't really get a feel for the car until you're inside, behind the wheel, driving the darn thing. And this car is by far the best that we've built.
Yeah, it is very surprising the degree to which this is a different vehicle from the last generation vehicle. I mean, you mentioned earlier that, if somebody looks at it, they say, it's an Edge, but then you look at it a second time, it's like, wait a minute. It's changed entirely. And then the driving experience is just, and I think you'd agree with that.
The word that we used a lot was sophistication. It feels considerably more sophisticated than the last one in terms of the chassis dynamics, the steering response and feedback. I mean, even just holding a line through a corner. The electronic power steering is
E-Pass now, standard in
that's
the car.
That's a big
reason. I missed that. Beautiful.
Yeah.
The outside draws you in. Once you get inside and drive the car, it's something that you just got to have.
It was impressive.
Especially with the package that it delivers.
Quite different, yeah. Very positive.
Really cool. Well, we're going to wrap up this segment of the show with you, but Scott, thanks so much for coming on. It's really cool that we've got the vehicle in the studio with us as well. And so, ladies and gentlemen, Scott Smith, Program Manager for the new Ford Edge. Been awesome having you on Autoline After Hours.
It's truly my pleasure.
Thank you.
That's great.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break right now. We'll come back and talk about some of the news of the week and other things that the three of us have been doing. Thanks. You already know that you can listen to Autoline's Industry Insight in places like YouTube and Stitcher, but did you know that you can also listen to it live in your car? It's simple. Just pair your smartphone with your vehicle's Bluetooth connection or plug into the aux jack. Then navigate to Autoline.tv using your phone's browser. Find the show you want to hear and click play, just like you would on your computer.
This is Autoline After Hours with John McElroy.
It's that easy. Never be disconnected from Autoline's top-notch insider information with Autoline on the go. So, yeah, you guys have driven the Sedge. Yeah. I have not driven the Sedge. And
there it is. They, you have to drive it around the block when you
steal
this
one after the show.
Yeah,
right?
Shermer doesn't need it.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. So what else?
So we were at Ford today.
Mm.
Talk about this a little bit. They're looking at using big data and analytics to design the interiors of their cars. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, look, this is an industry that's been designing car interiors for well over a century. And it's what I got out of this presentation that Ford said of, you know, they're going to put all these sensors on people, track their eyes, where they go when they first get in a car and what things they kind of dwell on looking and start to measure their emotional response, whether they're excited looking at it or remain very calm. And what I'm getting out of this is, as you know, in any design program, you have several design themes. And then you try to figure out which is the best, or should we take this part of that one and this part of this one and put it all together? My guess is they're looking for more data to help them make those decisions rather than just a gut feel.
Doesn't sound like there's much room for artistry left in the whole
thing. I asked Maury Callum, who's the head of design for Ford. I said, you know what, Maury, with all of this science, what happens to the art?
Yeah.
Okay? And he said, well, we, you know, it's still our job to make it look beautiful, but we want to make sure that we don't make something that's too distracting. Certainly, we don't want to make something that looks ugly. But, you know, I mean, I got this sort of sense of it is that this is almost, you know, okay, data is a good thing. It's good to have more information. It's good to have input, feedback, so on and so forth. But, you know, at the end of the day, it seems to me that this is the decision that someone needs to make.
Yeah, I don't think.
Rather than, This is you know, the accumulated data seems to show
exactly
this.
You see all the interiors of the 50s and 60s, and there were even 30s, and there was some incredible artistry that happened there. I don't think anybody looked at it and thought, you know, what will the numbers show us if we start polling people about what we've created here?
I'm not even sure why they had the press conference, because they admitted themselves they don't have a name for this process. They haven't even finalized on how they're going to use it. And they've done a little bit of this with the Ford GT. So why the press conference about it? Why bring in the media to say, here's stuff that we're doing, though we're not even really using it all
that much?
But,
I mean, it seems to me that they must be putting a lot of stock in this because, I mean, clearly, they're saying they're basically wiring people's brains to see, how they're feeling about it, and you know, the eye tracking technology and so on and so forth. You know, all for designing the interiors. And so, I mean, I think this is probably a fairly big deal over there, and they're saying that, you know, this is what we want to do. And I just wonder about whether it's a worthwhile endeavor, whether they shouldn't be concentrating on some other things in terms of developing their vehicles.
Meanwhile, over at Jeep, they're telling their youngest designer on staff, design an interior for the Renegade that you'd like to do. And he's like, cool. And he does one. And everyone thinks it's fantastic.
Right. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, it's that sort of thing. And then, but he just mentioned the Jeep. Now, you saw some Jeeps for Moab this morning.
Yeah, this is really interesting. Every year for the last 10 years, Jeep Design has done these concepts that they truck out to Moab. And if you're not familiar with it, it's a big off-road jamboree kind of a thing that they hold there. And what I found very interesting about it is these are not fiberglass mock-ups. These are all fully capable off-road vehicles. And they've got some really wild ones. Ben, I don't know if you got any pictures that you can start pulling up and okay. That one's sort of boring.
That's the Overlander.
Okay. They put a tent on the top.
What happens
go back one, Ben. Because what's interesting about this, they call it the Outlander.
Outlander or Overlander?
Overland.
Overland.
Excuse me. Thank you, Aaron. I'm glad you're on the show.
What happened? but
what they're saying is there's a trend right now to take your vehicle way out in the boondocks and camp with your vehicle, as opposed to, you know, going backpacking or set up a separate tent. So they put this tent on the roof of the thing, and it pops up in no time. I mean, like, you know, 1 minute, boop, boop, and you're ready.
What happens if you accidentally roll the wrong way, though, and fall 5 feet off the top of the car?
Break your neck. I mean, come on. Of course, you got to be careful.
It's a Jeep thing.
Yeah.
I wouldn't understand.
So let's go to next picture, Ben, that you had up there. This one they call the Africa.
That's cool.
Which I think is awesome. And if you sort of squint a little bit, it looks like, you know, like an early 50s or late 40s Land Rover Defender.
Yep.
I mean, something that you would see in the African bush.
Steel wheels.
And, you know, they lengthened it. They've got this big door on back. It's four doors. And this is fully functional vehicle built right off the Wrangler. They raised the roof a little bit. They extended the rear because they said now that there's four-door Wranglers and people are bringing their kids and their dogs and everything, and everyone's bringing their junk, you need more storage capability. But I love the look, and especially the steel wheels. You know, nothing fancy schmancy. You know.
You know,
aluminum.
And this is Mark Allen, who's the head of Jeep Design, and he and his team are sort of like underground garage that work on these things, and they do this every year. And I think what is really, really interesting about it is that these guys then take these vehicles out to Moab.
And they play with them.
And they play with them.
Yeah. And they play with them. And they show customers. They get customer reaction. They learn from this stuff. And guess what? They'll bring it back to Moab for the next 5 years. So this isn't something, you know, at an auto show, you pull the cover off and you never ever see it again.
And they may actually build some of them, too. They did that JK8 pickup truck aftermarket kit.
Right.
That is
So the Mopar guys are really keen on what these Jeep guys are doing.
That Africa kit, that all looked like just plain old sheet mold compound that you could probably do a mold of that fairly easily, and suddenly you've got yourself a taller, longer Wrangler.
Right. Yeah, and it also struck me as interesting because we had the Renegade in the studio a couple weeks ago with Art Anderson, the chief engineer of that, and they have a Cherokee that they worked on. And I got to say, from my eye, when we look at the we just saw the Wrangler, now we're seeing this. I got to say, the Wrangler just lends itself so much more to doing things like this. I mean, authenticity of...
But wait, there's more.
Yeah. Show us one that the internet lost their mind on, yeah.
Another picture, Ben. Pull up another.
There it is.
Yeah, okay.
Look at this thing. So this is also based on the Wrangler. They call this the Chief.
Yes.
And if you know your Jeep history, there was a Chief that looked very much like this that came out in the early 70s. I want to say 72-ish, 74-ish. And what's so cool is... it's very open air. There's glass for the front doors, but all the glass, there is no glass beyond the B pillar.
This isn't the most open air Jeep that they had there today, though.
No. We'll get to that one, too.
Well, the internet lost their mind when they saw this morning. I mean, it's Cherokee Chief, Wagoneer style.
Looks terrific.
It looks so retro.
I mean,
cool.
Doesn't that look like something that you could stick in a showroom right now and sell everyone you can make?
Yeah.
And being the Wrangler, it's still body on frame, isn't it? So, I mean, how hard could it be to actually come up with different kits for this kind of thing?
Another thing that was big for Mark Allen was the color on this. There's pale blue. I mean, it's like a baby powder blue kind of a thing. Who would associate that with Jeep?
Yeah.
But and again, what the interior of this is all got all little kinds of things that allude to surfing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you picture this on the beach, boy, that color just works so well.
It's got this surf rated badge on the side instead of trail rated.
You know, and you think about the Element. Remember when the Honda Element first came out? And it was about for surfers. Okay, so if you were a surfer and you were in Malibu or someplace like that, which vehicle would you want?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, amen. Yeah, you'd want the Chief. Ben, let's pull up another one. There's one other one I want to get to here. That one's sort of okay, too. This one they called, what was it? It was like the...
Red Rock Responder?
Yeah, Red Rock Responder. To me, this almost has a Paris-Dakar vehicle kind of look to it. But they're bringing this out to Moab.
An emergency response vehicle. It had all kinds of tools and whatnot in the back.
Exactly. Yeah. They've got, you know, extra winches and impact guns. And, you know, so if you're broken down out on the Rubicon Trail, this thing pulls up and you can fix your Jeep.
I think if you're broke down on the Rubicon Trail, you want a a Ram Powermaster to come get you.
Yeah. Helicopter.
Or a helicopter. I was going to say, I'm with you, Aaron. Ben, let's pull up another one, because there's one other that I really want to get to. This thing.
There it is.
This is what they call the staff car.
Talk about a throwback.
And it's made to look like, you know, World War II, 1945, no doors, staff car. The wheels are 35 inches, if I remember off the top of my head. Very military spec, everything to it. And it looks authentic. Yes. When you look at it, you go, that can't be a modern Wrangler, but it is.
You would cut something off getting out of that driver's seat on the axe that's mounted right there.
That's the possibility.
The other thing in all these concepts that I think is very cool that absolutely changes the interior, no headrests.
Yeah.
They just took it off. I mean, it's a concept. You can get away with it, right? And but it's true. Headrests really kind of ruined the look of the interior of a car.
That kind of looks like a death trap, I got to admit. I don't know that I'd want to go around on the trails in something that didn't have.
You know, what's really cool about these is that, you know, there are rolling concepts. There are concepts that move and drive, and they generally move slowly and drive horribly and don't move very well. But, I mean, these guys are taking, you know, real Jeeps in transferring them like that.
And they maintain that ability.
It's just awesome.
Yeah.
I think this is probably why their customers just go gaga over these things, because they know, I could take this on the Rubicon. I can take this out on the Slick Rock at Moab. So
if they say the right things, they might get able to.
No, you're absolutely right. And Mopar is all over this. I learned today that on average, every Jeep sold has two Mopar accessories on it. So, it's a brand that lends itself to
it. Money.
Okay, we're going to take another quick break. We got more to talk about. We'll be back in a jiffy.
From Shanghai to the Silicon Valley, the auto industry may make news around the globe, but there's only one spot to get your daily dose. Check out AutoLine Daily at AutoLine.tv, Monday through Friday at noon Eastern. AutoLine Daily, for the concise word on everything cars.
What else, Gary? I know you had a list of things.
Well, I mean, we just heard earlier about the desire for autonomous cars, and Tesla made some autonomous news today.
What? Because I've been driving in the car all day.
So basically, and I'm sure we're going to hear from Anton about this. This is the guy who writes to John and I on a regular basis.
All about Tesla.
But they had talked about how they were going to make range anxiety a non-issue, and I thought that maybe they were going to somehow magically make the batteries allow you to have greater range, but that's not it. Basically, what they're doing is that they're tracking your vehicle, whether you're using the navigation system or not, such that it will, keep you advised as to your range versus the availability of power in terms of their supercharger stations or other stations. And, you know, that's nice. I mean, but, you know, for Tesla, they're claiming, 270-mile range. So, I mean, it's like a car. So if you don't know to fill up your car, then... But the other thing is that they're going to do a software download, and Musk claims that you could, in effect, drive from San Francisco to Seattle...
Hands-free.
Ooh. On existing Model S's. Okay, not something special, but with an existing Model S. So, I mean, but they said, now the problem is that due to regulations and whatnot, driving in communities and neighborhoods and things like that, you know, so they're not recommending that anybody
just on the highway
do this. It'd be a highway sort of thing, but that is the sort of
That's traffic jam assist, right? But at highway speeds, not, you know, limited to 40 miles an hour like everyone else is talking about doing. Mm-hmm.
Well, Mercedes-Benz has said that the S-Class is ready to go. It's ready for full autonomy. All they have to do is flip a switch. It's not all the hardware.
All they have to do is lock up their lawyers in a room, and they can go ahead and do it.
But they're ready to do it, too. It's like Tesla's taking a step in front of them. But we'll see. I'm not entirely convinced that it's entirely safe for everybody involved.
Well, you look, of course there's going to be an accident at some point.
Yeah,
so, you know, we'll find out what their tolerance for litigation is.
Yeah.
But I think this is the way the industry is going. I think it's a good thing, and I'm all in favor of it.
And, you know, there was Chris Urmson, who is in charge of the Google autonomous car project, and he made a speech Tuesday at the TED conference. They had one up in Vancouver. And this was one of the most interesting quotes I've ever read about developing autonomous technology. Okay. So the whole issue is this going to be an incremental thing? Is this that as you add this technology and then we'll get more and more autonomous? And that seems to be the direction that most car makers seem to be taking. And so he said, and this is a quote about, you know, this incrementalism in developing. And he goes, "That's like me saying, if I work really hard at jumping, one day I'll be able to fly." So basically saying that if you're going to do this, mm-hmm. you're going to do this, yeah. right? I mean, this isn't a matter of we're going to add this, we're going to add, you know, park assist, we're going to add lane keeping, you know, that basically, okay, you've got to develop the technology to do it.
Yeah. No, you got to go headfirst into the pool. And the reason I say this is I think the big danger for the industry is not level four, fully autonomous cars, get in and say, take me home, and it doesn't. The real dangerous part is level three, where it's semi-autonomous mm-hmm. and your car tells you at some point, beep, 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 now you have to take control. But what if you got your laptop in your lap,
yeah.
you know, and you're scribbling something
and
with
coffee in your other hand?
Exactly.
Having a nap.
Right. Yeah, you're
a nap.
So to me, that's the real, you know, that's where the lawyers are really going to get involved, is more with level three cars than with level four.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing, going back to Chris Urmson, that I thought was the most significant thing that came out of it, is he said Google is not going to build cars. Hmm. And I had an interview with Ron Medford, also involved, former NHTSA executive, now working for Google. So as recently as last October, he told me Google was not decided yet whether it was going to build cars or just license its technology.
Well,
so for Urmson to come out and say, we're not going to build cars, to me is a big announcement.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they want to? I mean that's the trouble and expense, and mostly the expense of trying to build a car is extreme. I mean, if
well,
you've got companies
and
that'll
he
buy
said,
your
and
systems.
This was the quote that I liked. He said, you know, we've learned that building cars is real
yeah.
complicated.
Oh, yeah.
And the car companies are actually pretty good at it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so what do these guys know about stamping and welding right. and all that sort of thing? You know,
right.
I mean, it's just not.
Well, they don't make anything anyway.
Right.
right?
So it would be, you know, the necessity for them to do that.
The investment would be ridiculous.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. But, man, and NVIDIA, and I think Danny Shapiro, you've talked to him maybe.
Yeah, we've had him on the TV show.
And,
right.
They just came out with these new processors for autonomous cars and saying they can weave together data streaming from 12 cameras, driver assistance features to run simultaneously, surround view, collision avoidance, pedestrian detection, mirrorless operation, cross-traffic monitor, driver state monitoring, so it can, you know, if you're taking that nap,
mm-hmm.
it can probably wake yeah. you up before you need
See,
to.
See, that's interesting because
before you crash. I don't want to be woken
Google
up
and everyone else are taking two different approaches to autonomy. Google is it's a mapping based system,
mm-hmm.
and why? Because they're the mapping yeah. leaders in the world, right?
Sure.
Everybody else doesn't have that capability, so they have to go for much more precise measurement of exactly where the car is, not just on a map, but to its surroundings. And I got to believe that this new NVIDIA processor, where you're saying you can synthesize 12 cameras at the same time, that's going to give these guys, the others, the non-Googles that are working on autonomy, probably the kind of precision that they're looking for.
Right, and then they're saying it's a neural network, so it will learn under driving conditions, it'll learn behaviors and so on and so forth. Yeah, and to the point of Google, they're logging 3 million miles in simulators every day. In addition to real-world driving tests. So
someday this is all going to come together where the actual self-driving car and your healthcare company are going to get together, and it's not going to let you drive through a Taco Bell anymore. It's going to take control and say, sorry, we've talked yep. wirelessly with your healthcare
You've
provider.
You've already had 5,000 calories
exactly,
today.
Exactly, yeah. You just wait. This is coming.
So we see that number of car manufacturers are pulling out of Russia, and
yeah.
The Russian economy tanking.
Mm-hmm.
And
boy, it is yeah. nosediving.
Yeah.
yeah.
And the other thing, too, is the cars are doing bad. Trucks even worse.
Yeah.
Medium and heavy trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what drives so much of any country's economy. And I want to say car sales are down almost 40%, but I want to say medium and heavies are down 70%.
Jesus.
Yeah, so you mentioned General Motors pulling out, and so I thought, I wonder how many cars General Motors actually sells there. So I contacted them and said, you know, what are your sales in Russia? So last year, GM global sales were 9.9 million and change, okay, global sales. Okay, of that, in 2014, they sold... This would be a quiz. Guess how many Cadillacs they sold in Russia in 2014, the whole year?
14.
I saw the number in your book, so I can't.
Okay.
1,304?
24, yeah. 1,324 cars. So in the first 2 months of this year in the United States, Cadillac has sold 23,419 cars, and we all say Cadillac isn't doing very well in this country, right? I mean, we're all like, oh, Cadillac sales are down. Okay, for the entire year of 2014, they sold,
1400.
You know, Chevrolet in 2014, I'm not going to make you guess because you read that.
Okay.
It's 123,175 vehicles in Russia for the entire year. Now, again, look at Chevy sales in the United States first 2 months of the year. 302,670 vehicles. I mean, so it's just like...
They're not missing anything.
I think it's a mistake for GM to pull out of Russia. And the only reason I say that is... You know, until Putin went crazy and into Crimea and all, got all the sanctions down on his head, Russia was one of the places that looked really promising.
Yeah.
Then, and everybody was forecasting that it was going to surpass the German market in total vehicle sales.
If the R
3 million plus,
we talk about the
you know they'll be lucky if they do 1.5 million this year.
Yeah, but I mean, even in 2013, before all this happened, I mean, General Motors sold a grand total of 257,583 cars. So I mean, that was in 2013.
Yeah, I know,
this
Gary,
was pre
250,000 cars.
Just
is
sounds
not bad.
To me like the old GM way of doing things. Hey, we'll get in. Oh, it's not working. Okay, we're out. And you know, where's your strategic planning?
Yeah.
You know, was your strategy just to see, well, let's see if we can do anything, or was it to say, this is a country that's going to have significant sales at some point, post-Putin. This is a country that we're going to have to probably get back into. It's like they're in and out with Chevrolet in Europe.
Well, plus, they were developing all kinds of joint ventures, too. They had at least two that I know of.
Yeah.
And Optiva is one of them, and there's another one that they'd actually were building things together with some other Russian companies in Russia.
Mm-hmm. Right, but if we look at it, I mean, there's less than a production plant volume that they're selling.
True.
So, I mean, that's you got to take those costs into account.
I understand. But, you know, again, to me, it says something about their long-term planning that it's like, oh, we got a problem, we're bailing.
Well, I'd go to China. Just like
they're already in China.
I'd put my investment there. Come on, that's what you need to be doing.
They are still going to be selling a couple of models there, aren't they?
Corvette.
In Russia, Corvette, Tahoe,
Corvette.
Or Suburban.
Camaro.
Camaro.
And
tons of demand for Camaro. St. Petersburg.
All those made in USA, or at least for now, made in Canada when it comes to Camaro, but that's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
What else, Gary?
What else?
What else has been happening this week?
Well, I spent last week, went down to the Edge Drive.
Yeah.
And you were down there, but I spent the rest of the week down there doing a mid-size pickup comparison test.
How'd that work out?
It's very interesting. We had the Canyon, we had the Colorado, we had the Nissan Frontier Pro 4X, and the Toyota Tacoma TRD Pro. And everybody sent their top four-wheel drive off-road pickup in the mid-size category, except for the Canyon. The Canyon was not.
Okay, so was the Toyota the new one or
no?
So it was the last.
It was the last one.
Yeah, because the new one's not out yet.
Okay. Yeah, the new one won't be here. Until
I thought maybe
the end of the year.
It was you.
They
might have sent you.
We asked. Believe me. But the idea was, I mean, there was a valid point. So why would you have this comparison test if at least one of these two Japanese trucks is going to be changing? But it's not coming until the end of this year. So I mean, pretty much for 2015, if you're looking for a midsize pickup, these are your choices. This is all you've got. So. The interesting thing was the one that I liked driving a lot was, I can't give any results on that because they're still being compiled and not the data, the testing that's gone on. I liked the Pro 4X. I liked the Nissan Frontier. It's old and it's small, but crude, but off-road, it was fun. We had an off-road portion that's actually this, like one of those Baja-style tracks where they jump the trucks and whatnot. But it was a great time.
Probably the smallest of them, too,
right? It was the smallest of them.
So more compact, more nimble.
It felt much more like a compact pickup.
So how did the new GM vehicles Your impression of them?
It's hard to make a direct comparison because the two Japanese pickups were the most extreme off-roaders that they had. And the most extreme off-roader was the Z71 package for the Colorado. And it doesn't have quite
not that
the
extreme.
Same. No, it's not a ZR2. Like we saw the ZR2 concept in LA, and we're kind of hoping that they'll make one of those because it looks like a lot of fun.
So is it, I mean, when we were looking at those Wranglers earlier, I mean, is it sort of the thing that, you know, you had this sense that the Japanese old, comparatively old pickups were more authentically like that?
Yeah. They really are.
And that's so it's sort of like, you know, you're a hardcore guy, this is really what you're gonna want.
When we got in, we do a family day where we have a man on the street who's in the market for these vehicles, comes and gives us some opinions, and he owns an 05 Frontier. And he gets into the new one, he gets into the 15, he's like, this is exactly the same. It literally doesn't feel any different than my current 05 Frontier. And that's one of the things they haven't really changed very much on them. It's like buying a brand new 10-year-old car in many ways. But if you like those old trucks, and a lot of people still like these trucks,
right,
it's okay. It's actually fun. The Tacoma still outsells all the rest of the field by almost 2-to-1 margins.
Yeah. But Toyota never gave up on the segment.
Yeah.
They always treated it seriously.
But they didn't do much with it.
No, because they had it to themselves.
Yeah.
So they've been coasting on their laurels.
So it'll be really interesting to see the next one that comes along. Yeah.
Did they have enough time in their program to react to the GM vehicles? Because I'm sure all the hard points must have been already set on that truck, for example. And I just wonder if they had enough time to go, ooh, we better do this and we better do that.
It wouldn't take much, I think, to update the current Tacoma into something a bit more dramatic, and at least a bit more updated. There are certain elements like the bed depth. The bed depth on the two Japanese pickups is considerably less than, and it's supposed to be 18 inches, but you look at the Colorado and Canyon, they almost feel like a full-size pickup.
Right.
They drive like full-size pickups. They feel much more, I don't want to say sophisticated, but considerable in terms of their mass. And
see, but that leads to the question whether the buyer of a midsize pickup wants that necessarily.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like it almost seems like, oh, yeah, that's what you want. You want to be a full-size pickup. No. Because if you wanted a full-size pickup, I mean, the deals are out there such that you could get one. I mean, it's not a problem.
Well, the interesting part is that we had a GMC Canyon, the SLT, which is their volume model, but has pretty much loaded. It was about $40,000. And to get into a Sierra SLT, you're looking at about $10,000 to $12,000 more for that truck. And it's just as nice as the Sierra was in terms of content and features. It has forward collision warning radar and backup cameras and everything you pretty much need that they'd have on the full size.
Look, I got to believe that GM is grinning from ear to ear with these compact trucks.
Yeah.
They're selling well, and it has not cannibalized the big ones. So, you know, if I look at the numbers and extrapolate, looks to me that, like, they're easily going to sell over 100,000 Canyons and Colorados this year and not put a dent in their bigger trucks.
And so that's all pure plus volume for those guys since their last trucks have been.
It's Ranger owners who've been waiting for a new Ranger, and Ford's trying to sell them on the Transit Connect as a good replacement for that. And they're like, it's not the same.
No.
It really isn't.
Yeah, it's the nature of the vehicle.
Yeah.
It's just entirely different.
No, pickup buyers want pickups, not some little van.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're driving a big van
now. I'm driving the big Transit. I am blown away.
Yeah. Isn't it great?
I mean, this is like the big cargo van for enthusiasts. I'm telling you. I'm knocked out. I went out mountain biking last night, and I'm driving back from the park. I almost started giggling that I like this thing that much. The steering is so precise. The cornering dynamics, and I've got the high roof version. This thing's got to be 10 feet tall.
Even the turning
circle. It's gigantic.
The turning circle is
acceptable.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I couldn't, going into it, I never thought I was going to enjoy driving a big box van like that so much.
So what's the deal with all of these Euro-style vans? I mean, why have they suddenly come here? Why have they suddenly become so popular?
I think for two reasons. Number one is the domestics, GM, Ford, and the then Chrysler, coasted on their old body-on-frame vans forever.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when my dad got an Econoline for the family, we're a big family, 1976. That's when that stupid van came out.
Mm-hmm.
I say stupid. I shouldn't say that. Because they did update it and they made changes. But, man, the tooling was paid off for probably in the Reagan administration.
Oh, yeah.
So, and Chevy did the same thing with the Express and GMC with
Savannah.
And Chrysler dropped theirs during the Daimler-Chrysler days.
Yeah.
And that's when the Sprinter came over. And you talk to anybody who has a Sprinter, man, they love that thing. Love it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pricey, but total cost of ownership, that's where the story is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, here comes time to start thinking about for GM and Ford, geez, maybe we ought to start replacing these things that have been around forever. And guess what? Ford says, hey, our whole strategy is one Ford. Whatever we sell in the world, we're going to sell in the world. So instead of doing an updated Econoline, why don't we just bring over this van that's already proven? And I think it's working for them.
Yeah.
On the screen, John.
Oh, it's up on the there it is. It's sitting out in the parking lot.
That's the front window.
The big Mamoo, I call it. And it looks so ungainly. You know, it. Styling-wise, that is not an attractive van, certainly not with that big roof.
Yeah, but I mean, it's so damn huge. I mean, there's not a whole lot you're going to be able to do with that.
I know. And look how inky-dinky the wheels look to the rest of the van. They look totally out of proportion.
That's true.
But I got to tell you.
It's not top-heavy at all, though.
It's
skateboard wheels.
Yeah. And all of my friends that I bring in and say, look at this thing, they all get inside and they go, look at this. You can stand up and walk around. And to a person, they've said, man, you could have a party in here. Now, maybe that's something about the van that's eliciting it, or maybe it's just the kind of people I hang out with. But everybody thinks this is a great party machine.
Have you driven the Ram ProMaster, the full-size Ram version? It's awful. It's nothing like the Transit. It's nothing like the Sprinter. It's got this strange seating position where you feel like you're going to fall forward over the dash. It's front drive as opposed to rear drive. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel anything like the other two in the market, and I really wonder how it's going to do on that.
Yeah, no, I haven't driven that one.
So dynamically, very different.
Speaking of this Ram vehicle, so what do you make of Sergio saying that he's open to the possibility of a merger with another car company? Where's that coming from?
Yeah, where is that coming
from? Yeah.
I mean, everyone's been talking that we're going to see more mergers in this business. But very interesting that Sergio is, like, bringing it up on his own.
Right.
And I got to believe it's his way of using the media to let every car company in the world know, hey, I'm open to a deal.
Yeah.
Let's talk.
Yet he keeps telling Volkswagen that he's not going to sell Alfa Romeo. Like, sorry, you can't have that part.
Okay, but do you think he wants to take the whole ball of wax and say, okay, this is what you're going to merge with?
Well, the thing is, who would it mesh well with? I mean, the only thing I can think of are Chinese.
Well, I'm with you on that one. I'd take a strong look at Peugeot. I think Carlos Tavares is really turning that thing around. And you'll also notice that Sergio has said Fiat is no longer a mass market brand for Europe. Mm-hmm. They're going to concentrate just in A and B class cars. That's where it's going to be an entry level brand. So then you think, okay, what else have you got? Well, they're not going to do Chrysler. Those plans are over. Lancia can't be sold outside of Italy. There must be a law of the universe on that because it just hasn't worked. So your gap is going to go from Fiat to Alfa Romeo. And a little bit above that to Maserati. That's a huge gap in between. And when you look at what Peugeot's doing, especially Citroën and the Citroën DS brand, boy, to me, you could put PSA right in between Fiat brand and Alfa Romeo brand.
That's a good thought.
So there's a thing for Europe. And then who's going to get Mazda? I mean, here's this little gem of a company that just does all kinds of great things, but hasn't been able to break out, never has been able to get the scale. So if I were Sergio, first and second on my list would be PSA and Mazda. And then to your point, Aaron, I'd look at one of the independent Chinese companies because they need a more significant presence in China. And me personally, I'd look at Geely. I think very interesting. Or I'd look at Great Wall, which is, you know, really good.
Now, Geely's got Volvo, so how would that mesh?
I don't know. I'm just looking for a well-run independent, i.e. not state-owned, no government, nothing, you know, but well-run Chinese operation. And when I look at Geely, they're not that great right now, but having talked to Peter Horbury, who's doing all their design, he's hyper bullish on the future of that company in China. And Peter, I got a lot of respect for, so. Mm-hmm. So maybe it would be Chery, maybe it would be some, but yeah, I mean, the legs of the stool are that Fiat is now very weak in Europe. Why not get a partner there? It's got, you know, the Chrysler Group in North America. Fiat's actually very strong in Latin America, and it's virtually non-existent in China. So the weak links are Europe and China plus Japan. So
you can't really use Mazda for that inroad into China.
No,
either.
No. Yeah, so no, that would be Chinese. That would be your Japanese card.
Yeah. And even then, that's not the growth market that it used to be, especially with an aging population.
Not at all.
The sales of cars in Japan.
No, but I would go after Mazda just because I think it's a pretty good.
Okay, but why has Ford used to have Mazda, right?
Yeah.
And then gone. I mean, so why hasn't a major car company gone after Mazda?
Well, they do have that tie-up with Fiat. They're going to do the Roadster.
They do, right.
So we'll see.
Maybe that's the MX-5 platform.
Why do mega mergers? Why not just say, hey, Gary, you got a car, and I like what you're doing, and I need to get in that segment, but I can't afford it, so let's partner up. And hey, Aaron, you got this great engine. Why don't we? And, look at what Nissan, Renault are doing, partnering with Mercedes-Benz. Mm-hmm. And I think partnerships are the smarter way to go. But I don't know.
There's probably a limit to that, however. In this day of the information age and the Internet where everybody can see where everything is, you'd have to limit some of those partnerships to things like what Mercedes-Benz is doing with engines and powertrains. If you try and rebadge a vehicle from another market, people in that new market know what that is.
Well, we're talking about these commercial vans, and yeah. General Motors is going to be selling the Nissan.
Yeah.
In this market, and mm-hmm. you can buy the Nissan in this market.
Express City or something like that.
Yeah. So what would you do, Gary? Partnerships? Mergers? Why do you think Sergio's doing this?
I think that perhaps he wants to get while the getting's good. The car industry's on an upswing. European market's coming back. Japan market's not so good. No. U.S. market's coming back, and he's looking at this and saying, you know what? I put this company together. I have it all arranged. Why not take the opportunity now while things are on a positive upswing?
I like that thinking because, the one thing that FCA does not have is enough cash to pull off their plan.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one way to do it. Try to get more cash and or why not split the costs with somebody? Mm-hmm. And now maybe you do have the cash to pull off the plan.
Right. So I think that's why it'd be happening. Very interesting, though.
It's a fascinating business. That's why we do a show about it. Hey, we ought to wrap up. Mm-hmm. But Aaron, great having you here.
Thank you very much. Pleasure.
Good show. Really good show.
Thank you.
And Gary, let's do it again next week.
We'll do that. Okay.
Cool. Want to thank all of you for having tuned in.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires. Your journey, our passion.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.